Welcome back to the program. Every day, dramatic changes are taking place in businesses all across the country, in fact, throughout the world. None of us can predict the future, but as it has been often said, one of the things we can do is invent that future, or in the case of some existing companies, reinvent that future. We're going to talk about that today with my guest, Jason Jennings. He's one of the most in-demand business speakers in the world today. He's the best-selling author of the previous book, It's Not the Big That Eat the Small, It's the Fast That Eat the Slow. It is my pleasure to welcome Jason Jennings to the program today to talk about his new work, The Reinventors, How Extraordinary Companies Pursue Radical, Continuous Change. Jason Jennings, thanks so much for joining us.
Jeff, great to be with you.
As we look at the corporate landscape, it certainly becomes clearer every day, as your book really accentuates, that companies today need to reinvent and re-innovate in order to stay ahead.
The surprise, Jeff, is why they need to stay ahead. And during our research, it really jumped out at us. One would guess that companies, businesses, whether it's a small restaurant or whether it's a dry cleaner or a widget manufacturing company or a big multinational, one would think that they want to stay ahead of their customers or that they want to stay ahead of their shareholders and please their shareholder, and that's the big reason for change. But that's not what we discovered. As I was sitting down with Mike Long, the CEO of Arrow Electronics, a huge $22 billion electronics company. If you've got anything electronic around you, it's passed through Arrow's hands. And he's taken the company on a journey from $10, $11 billion to $22 billion. And I asked Mike Long, how long are you going to continue to buy new businesses and invent new businesses? And he looked at me and he said, forever. He said, Jason, you don't understand. I'm surrounded by the most talented workers on the planet. He said, if I don't keep growing, if I don't keep changing, they're no longer going to be challenged. They're no longer going to see the opportunity to do better financially, and then they'll leave. And he said, if they leave, they either join my competitors or they become my competitors. He said, the reason I have to continually change is first to stay ahead of my people and give them better tomorrows than today's. That will allow them to stay ahead of the consumers or customers' quickly changing needs, and that's what allows us to please the shareholder. So companies reinvent so that they can hold on, find, keep, and grow the right people.
Part of this that's, I suppose, important to keep in mind is that this is a radical change in business today. We think back 30, 40, 50 years, businesses stayed the same for a long time. People stayed in jobs or within companies for long periods of time. This is radically different.
It is radically different. And I think the reason for the change is this. For a long, long time in the United States, it was really enough to open your doors and service existing demand in the marketplace. You'd open a bakery, open your doors, and you would have customers because you were the only bakery in town or one of a couple of bakeries in town. And there seemed to be some kind of a balance between demand in the marketplace and the outlets that were serving that demand. Well, about 25 years ago, everybody decided they wanted more. They wanted to grow. They wanted to expand. And so all of a sudden, there was a lot more competition than there ever was before, and customers were demanding more and, in many instances, willing to pay less. And so today, it's almost impossible to just open your doors and serve existing demand. For my last book, we studied 72,000 companies for Think Big, Act Small, and we discovered only 10 companies who were able to achieve double-digit revenue increases for 10 consecutive years out of the 72,000 companies we studied. So growth is very, very hard, and that is the reason. The need to grow is the reason for constant reinvention.
Of course, the other aspect is the creative destruction that we see in so many businesses, where companies have to dramatically change just to keep up.
Without question, and I think probably one of the best examples, we talk about them in the book, is Steve Jobs and Apple. Just imagine what it's like in 14 years to go from a company that's teetering on the edge of bankruptcy and has an insignificant 2% market share into the highest capitalized company in the world. And yet take a look at what they do. Every 3 to 4 months, it's a brand new product announcement, and they basically let go of what was before. I mean, it's just moving forward constantly.
Talk a little bit about whether or not this is true across the board, whether every sector really is experiencing this, or it is something that is limited to just smaller sectors in the marketplace.
You know, what's happened is this. The Internet has really caused a democratization of all information. And a kid on a laptop with a connection in Sri Lanka has access to the same information that you and I have. And it was only maybe a decade and a half ago. I mean, that you had to have resources and you had to have money to gain access to information. Today, all the information is available to all the people all the time. And so let's suggest that you're out in, I'll make it up, you're in Waterloo, Iowa, you run a garden center, and all of a sudden it's determined that you're doing well. Well, before you know it, you're going to be mystery price shopped and mystery shopped by everybody else who wants to find out what you're doing, and they're going to replicate it in Spokane, Washington, or Napa, California tomorrow. It's happening with lightning speed because of the democratization of information. So in response to your question, during our research, I did not find one business category, not one business sector, I mean, that doesn't have to constantly reinvent.
How does it change the role of leadership, then, within companies today?
Fabulous question. One of the big discoveries we made in our research is that in order to become a serial reinventor, the first thing that has to happen is, as a guiding principle, you have to say as an organization, we are going to target and we are going to achieve a double-digit improvement in our financial performance every year. We are committed to growth. That changes everything because it forces companies to ask questions that many of them would not like to ask. Now, the next building block in reinvention is the leadership component. And what we discovered is that companies that are able to embrace radical continuous change have leaders who are able to do the following things. Number one, let go of yesterday's breadwinners. In most businesses, they actually have a reverential word they use for yesterday's breadwinners. They call them legacy brands. So a leader today has to be able to quickly peel off, quickly leave behind the legacy brands, which can bring a company down. The second thing that leaders today have to be able to let go of is ego. Leaders who still believe that they have to be the smartest person in the room are passé. They are like dinosaurs. When a leader has to be the smartest person in the room, all the information that they receive has been filtered, and it's going to be designed to let them hear what they want to hear, and bad decisions are going to get made. Leaders today have to be able to buck conventional wisdom. If you want to achieve unconventional results and you employ only conventional wisdom, it's a basic mathematical equation that doesn't work. If you want to achieve unconventional results, you have to employ unconventional wisdom. And the other trait of leaders today is they have to abolish and let go of same old, same old. You know the phrase, if it's not broke, don't fix it? Well, that's a stupid phrase as it applies to business today, because today the leader has to be examining every person, every product, every process, trying to wring out waste and asking the question, how can we make this better for every stakeholder? So sadly, most traditional leaders are not able to make the cut. I mean, we see that happening right now at HP. I mean, it's sad what's happening with which was once America's most innovative company, just one rash of job cuts and product cuts after another. Death by a thousand cuts never results in a successful company.
What about the danger, though, of the other side, which we hear talked about from time to time, which is change just for change's sake? The idea that you're always chasing the new thing, even if it's not the most prudent.
Well, we certainly didn't find that in any of our research. I think somebody would be a fool to pursue change just for change's sake and stir up the pot just for the sake of stirring it up, but we certainly didn't find any of that. The pot that has to be constantly stirred is the customer, and it is constantly asking the question, what is our customer going to want? What might they want? How can we better serve our customer? I don't think that that's a pot that you can stir too much. I think you've got to be constantly stirring that pot. But if you're embarking on just change for change's sake, I mean, that's stupid. That's like driving out of control.
One of the things that you talk about as really an invention or reinvention killer is a sense of entitlement that a lot of companies and individuals within companies have. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Jeff, over the past decade, not just the research for the reinventors, but over the past decade, myself and my research teams have studied more than 200,000 companies for our 6 books. And it's gotten to the point where you can pretty much walk into a business and it's the smell. I mean, it's palpable. You can feel it in the air, this sense of entitlement, which says, I have been here, I am here, and because I have been here and staked out this place, I have a right to be here, and I have a right to continue in business just because I'm here. Sadly, there's only one company that has been on every Fortune 500 list, DuPont. Only one. And when you consider that, you ask the question, of the hundreds of companies that have been on the Fortune 100 or the Fortune 500 list, these are the people who had, they had the intelligence. They had the financial resources, I mean, to maintain and to grow and go forward. And they've been sopped up, mopped up, disappeared, sold off, bankrupted, gone away. Why? Well, I think there's only one reason, is most of these companies and most of these leaders had a sense of entitlement, like the old small hometown banker who said, damn it, I am the small hometown banker, and I've been here, and I have a right to be here, and it's gonna be done my way. Well, we've seen those. Again, those people are dinosaurs. They're gone. It's time for anybody with a sense of entitlement to just, you know, stand aside and let somebody else jump in front of the parade.
How hard is it, though, to change some of these large, lumbering companies that have gotten so big and so entitled over such long periods of time that it's really hard? It's like moving, you know, a giant ship?
Not really. One would guess that, and I guess maybe I would have suspected that as well. Here's what it begins with, Jeff. If you're going to change one of these large, lumbering companies, I will not use the word vision, but when a leader comes in, because I think it's a hackneyed business buzzword, but when a leader comes in, it's an incredible opportunity, a one-time opportunity, we talk about it in the book, for the leader to view their job as a destination expert, for the leader to say, this is what we're going to be, this is where we're going to go, and then like a good travel agent, sitting down with the close people around he or she and saying, this is the destination. Are you set to go? So take a look at Google. Google says, we are going to organize all the information in the world. Well, you know, if you're digital savvy and if you're young, why wouldn't you want to go to work for a company that is organizing all the information in the world and has purchased 200 companies over the past 2 years? It means that you will have nothing but incredible opportunity ahead of you. So it begins with having a big noble purpose or cause, moving that noble purpose or cause throughout the organization, and getting rid of the people who don't buy in, and keeping and promoting the people who do. Imagine how incredibly powerful it is when you get everybody shooting at the same target. Sadly, it doesn't happen in most American businesses, because while the owner or the CEO is proclaiming that their workforce is their family, their workforce is their greatest asset, they then go to their office and sign another layoff round of a couple of thousand people. If you're going to change an organization, it has to begin with having a big noble purpose or a cause. Microsoft said, we're going to put a Microsoft operating system on every desktop in the world. And it's now gone on to say, we're going to put a Microsoft operating system on every phone, every living room, and every desk in the world. Well, you either get to play, and you believe that, and you want to be part of that, or not. J.M. Smucker says, we exist for one reason, to bring families together for happy meals. You can either believe that and come here and be part of that, or not. Apple says, we're going to change the whole world. It's just that pure and simple. So if you're going to change these large, lumbering organizations, it begins with a big noble purpose or cause. Let's compare that with what Meg Whitman is doing right now at HP. What is HP's big, noble purpose? What is their cause? She doesn't have one. She hasn't voiced one. She hasn't moved one down the organization. And all she's proven that she can do is cut plants, lop off heads, and make the organization smaller than it was.
Talk a little bit about generational differences and how that plays into what you've been talking about.
you're moving on to one of my favorite subjects. I love it when old-timers, and for old-timers, I'm going to refer to old-timers as, I guess, most people over the age of 40 or 45. And the constant lament we hear is, what is wrong with young people today? They want too much responsibility too fast. They're willing to job skip and go through 9 jobs until they find the one they want. They don't have the same work ethic that I had. And I would say to you, as a result of our research, that is hogwash. There's one big difference in terms of generational issues, and that is this. Young people today, and young people today, I'll say, is everybody up to the age of about 34 or 35. Mm-hmm. Young people today have a BS meter. I mean, that is incredible. And the moment the needle peaks into the red, like on a VU meter, they say, I'm out of here. I'm not sticking around. Young people expect transparency in an organization. They expect to play a vital role. They demand that their soul be fed as well as their pocketbook. I think young people today are the most exciting, I think it's the most exciting potential workforce that has ever existed on the face of the planet. But they've got that great BS meter, and they're not going to put up with it.
What happens when those values come in contact with more traditional, old-school values for companies that are looking only to shareholder interest, for example?
Well, you've answered your own question. I recall the CEO of a large company who'd been publicly traded for 42 years saying to me, he said, we've been very well as a publicly traded company for 42 years, and for 42 years we have never given short-term quarterly financial advice. He said, because the moment that a company begins issuing short-term quarterly financial advice, this is a direct quote, they have turned control of their company over to a bunch of 27-year-old snot-nosed analysts on Wall Street. And so if a company is acting only in the short-term interests of their shareholders, they will have generational issues because the BS meter is going to peak all the way into the red.
Talk a little bit, and you talk about many of them in the Reinventors, some of the companies that have done it right, that have gotten it right, that have been able to make these changes.
Well, I think one of the stellar examples of a company that's gotten it right is the story of Starbucks. Here was Howard Schultz, who came out of the same alma mater that I did, Northern Michigan University in Marquette, Michigan. And he built Starbucks into what it was around the end of the year 2000. He said, you know, I want to smell the roses. I want to take on some other things. And he stepped down as CEO. Well, within a couple of years, it appeared that Starbucks had kind of lost their way a little bit. And everybody was asking, is the bloom off that rose? Then the Great Recession hits. Starbucks loses a couple of $1 billion in annual revenues. Their stock price tanks, and the pundits are saying, it's all over, it's passé. Schultz reclaims the reins as CEO, and the first thing he does to feed the souls of people, here's a generational issue for you, he takes 10,000 Starbucks workers, 10,000, to New Orleans for a week to rebuild Katrina victims' homes. He gathers them all together in one place, and he looks out at them. He doesn't say this is about doing something for the shareholder. In his address, he spoke from the heart, and he said, this company is not about coffee. And if it's going to be about coffee or if it's going to be about Frappuccino or iced teas, he said, we won't make it. This company has to be about you and the better tomorrows that all of you want to have. He said the only way that you can have a better tomorrow is if the organization has growth. Starbucks is about growth. It's not about coffee. And I invite you to join me in building the company and growing. Here's what he did, and here's why I name him one of the best reinventors on the planet. Most companies, whether it's a small business again or a medium-sized business or a large business, they have difficulties grappling with one or two initiatives simultaneously or maybe a few initiatives a year. Here's what Schultz did. In his first 18 months back at the helm, he introduced a dizzying array. Listen to this, Jeff. They made 150 small bets. They changed the logo. There were brand new store designs. They began testing beer and wine in stores, mobile payments, a brand new dessert line, Starbucks Petites, oatmeal, via instant coffee in retail stores, which became a huge hit. And then as one of these little small bets would hit, they would quickly scale it throughout the organization. Our estimate is one of their small bets, oatmeal, is going to account for about $350 million in annual sales. Young people want it fast. Bring it on. They want it for the right reason because they've got skin in the game, and they want to have a better tomorrow than today. And so I think Starbucks is an incredible example of a company that has reinvented itself nonstop. Google, I mentioned a few minutes ago, purchasing 200 companies over the past 2 years. I mean, that's an average of two companies a week. I mean, that's because they don't know what the next big thing, what the next hot thing is going to be. So they're involved in gaming. They're now the owner of Motorola. They work with NASA on spacecraft. I mean, they're involved in every activity. You could go to work. A young person could go to work for Google today and never have to work for anybody else.
Talk a little bit about retail and how companies are dealing with the changes there.
Well, the watchword in retail seems to be, in fact, I've been considering a title for my next book and just a few days ago dismissed it because it's not how I want to be branded. But the working title that I had in my mind was the Cheap Revolution. If you're going to make it in retail today, you have to be working the supply chain continuously. You've got to take something that took a product development that used to take a year to a year and a half. I mean, today you've got to go from concept being in the stores in 6 weeks. You've got to wring out every penny of waste in the supply chain. And so you look at a retailer like H&M, and you go, wow, this is incredible. On the other hand, just this morning on the Today Show, they interviewed Mickey Drexler, and he said that a product design at his company today takes about a year to a year and a half. Well, I don't think things bode very well for Mickey Drexler, and I don't think he'll ultimately be any more successful than he was at the Gap. If you're going to be in retail, it's got to be inexpensive. All waste has got to come out of the supply chain, and it's got to be very fast, or you have to compete at the upper end, the luxury end of the marketplace.
How is all of this impacting manufacturing today?
Well, manufacturing, I believe, although there's been an uptick in manufacturing jobs in the United States, and I think we'll continue to see that, but I think manufacturing is going to continue to be focused in undeveloped and underdeveloped countries where it's possible to say, okay, this is the new glass that is going to go on the cover of the iPhone, and somebody can ring a bell, and 25,000 workers will get out of their dormitory beds, and they'll report to work. I mean, and within 12 hours, you'll be producing millions of these a day. You've got to be able to move on a dime in manufacturing. And unfortunately, I don't know that the labor force in America, I don't think the unions will allow it. I don't think that the labor force in America is used to it. And so I certainly think you're going to see most high-tech manufacturing, which is where the world's headed, everything is going to become digital, I mean, is going to be centered outside the United States.
One of the companies that you talk about in the book really is as much in the service sector as anything else, and that's Southwest Airlines.
There's an incredible story about Southwest, and there is a lesson to be learned by every business. So here's the story. It's the mid-1970s. The airline industry is becoming deregulated, and here's this little tiny airline in Texas with four airplanes. And there's one problem. They're running out of cash. They just don't have the cash. They've exhausted the possibilities for raising money, and they sit down and they say, you know, in order to stay in business, we're going to have to probably sell one of our four airplanes. Well, they didn't want to do it because they said if we sell one of our four airplanes, we're going to have to give up service to communities and cities we promised to serve. And secondly, we're going to have to lay off people, and we promised we wouldn't do it. And they said, isn't there a way, I mean, to get as much productivity out of three airplanes as four? If we could sell one airplane, we could stay in business. And they sat down, and they figured out over a weekend, if we could turn an airplane in 10 minutes instead of 25 minutes, we could actually sell the fourth airplane, have enough money, see our way to profitability, and begin to expand again. But if we could do this turn on the ground in 10 minutes, we'd actually be able to increase the number of flights we offered. The question was, will the ground crews, will all the workers go along with it? Well, we'll have no opportunity. And that's the birth of Southwest Airlines. Now, the question I ask, Jeff, is this. What if you had a bunch of venture capitalists with a lot of extra money? What if Southwest had billions or hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank? I'd be willing to bet they would have never gotten to the 10-minute turnaround, and look at what they've become, the largest airline in the United States. It speaks to a spirit of, it's an Indian word, a Hindi word, jugaad, that we write about in the book, And jugaad simply means that for most reinvention, you don't need to throw a lot of money at something. For most reinvention, you have to ask the question, what pain is our customer having? I mean, what's bothering them? What's driving them crazy? What pain would they like to get rid of? Figure out a way to make the pain go away for the customer and figure out how to scale it. And very often that can be done with the existing resources within the organization.
And, of course, the flip side of that are companies, and you mentioned HP before, and you mentioned a lot of others in the book, that didn't make changes, that didn't get it, and are disappearing as a result, or have disappeared already.
The graveyard is filled with the bleaching bones of those who didn't get it. They didn't get that there's got to be a guiding principle of growth, that you absolutely have to let go, that you have to make lots of small bets, and you have to operate with the spirit of jugaad.
Jason Jennings, the book is The Reinventors, How Extraordinary Companies Pursue Radical Continuous Change. Jason, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Jeff, the best questions I've ever been asked.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.